On today's episode, we get to talk a lot about mead, and I didn't know a whole lot about it before, but interestingly enough, there's something that we should all know about it, and you're going to learn about it in this episode. I think you guys are going to really like this. Let us know what you think in the comments. Let's go ahead and get this started.
Welcome to Getting to Know the 570,
brought to you by Conversion Works Media,
a show that hosts special guests from in and around Northeast PA, sharing their stories, knowledge, and experiences in their work and personal lives.
Because let's face it,
doing business with locals feels good, but giving business to someone you know feels even better.
And now here's your host,
Frank Sepko.
Brian, I wish we would have thought about it in advance and we could have got a, you know, the old official.
The cork pop.
That would have been like the coolest way to just start this episode.
There's time.
With an official cork pop.
It's okay.
But I guess we don't. But anyway, exciting stuff, guys. Today we have Dan Schreffler, who is the owner and winemaker from Spacetime Mead and Cider Works out of Dunmore, PA. And we're here to learn all about what's going on in their business. And what a ball of energy just walked through my front door. So I'm like, I'm looking forward to this. I'm sure this is going to be good. And he's been on all kinds of interviews. So there's no he's not a stranger to the microphone. So good to have you here, Dan.
No, I'm not. Just kidding. Yeah. It's good to be here. I appreciate being here. Yeah. Welcome the opportunity.
Absolutely. I love it because what you just did would have been some of the interviews that would have started. And they've been like, no. And then it was just silent. And we're like, how are we going to make it through this? Ooh, boy.
Whole 5 minutes. That's the show. Thank you, everyone. Yeah. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks for coming. All righty. So Dan, mead and cider. Winemaker, it sounds like you got a couple of things going on there. Why don't we just sort of get right into it and let's start with just the overview of what your business is. We'll dive into the history and stuff later.
Sure, yeah. We have we're a licensed winery in Dunmore that specializes in honey wine, hard cider, maple wine, pretty much almost anything that we could ferment that is not grape or beer. Hmm. Really unique product, nice niche.
Nice niche.
Yeah, it's. I mean, a lot of people don't even know what mead is.
Is mead?
Honey wine. So
that's it.
Yep, that's it. Pretty much, instead of fermenting grapes, we take honey. We'll dilute it with a certain proportion of water or fruit juice, and at that point, it's the same technique as a winemaker would use.
Is that something that's typically stronger than wine?
You know that this is perfect. So there's a couple stereotypes for mead. One is the Renaissance fair, simple, syrupy kind of drink, and you dress up and you have drink it out of a mead horn.
Mead,
say, yeah, huzzah, and all those other kind of things.
Right.
Or their buddy made it in college. It tastes like jet fuel, or you know, it was like let's make the highest alcohol booze we could possibly do. So like pot, tons of honey, and then champagne yeast and tried to make 18%, and it's almost like, you know, the local wines you would get, the quote-unquote Dago Reds that, like, the first couple sips were terrible, but then after the third glass, life is good kind of thing.
Okay.
Same thing with those types of meads. But mead can be just as sophisticated as a grape wine. So we make stuff that is definitely in the sweeter range, so you're going to pair it with dessert, you're going to pair it with like a gorgonzola, or even the sipper itself, almost like a port or a dessert wine. And we also make stuff that's sophisticated for the dinner table. They're going to be drier. We have full control over how much alcohol we can make just based on how much sugar to water, sugar to liquid ratio is. So we have a lot greater flexibility than a typical grape winemaker has.
Nice. Now, is mead typically, now it sounds like you kind of maybe already said this, but is mead typically a sipper? Is it something that you would drink? Like, I mean, is it something that you could kind of take down pretty fast? I mean, is it up to the drinker, I guess?
Yeah, well, and it's all the above because we probably make about, well, over the course of our 6 years, I think we made probably about 50 different varieties of mead. And right now on our shelf, I think we have about 20 that goes from fairly dry, I think, sessionable meads, 7%, even 5.5%, you know, chill it, you know, throw an ice cube, whatever, summertime drink. And then we have more of these, the typical wine, typical wine range. Well, I got that out. Typical wine range, which is 10 to 14%. So those can be dry. So for, in fact, for Easter dinner with Pam, I'm going to have this nice honey apple wine that I can give someone and they would think it's a Gewürztraminer. It's that Ooh. Sophisticated and that nice. And then we have the middle of our flagship mead is called Andromeda. More what people think mead is. It's on the sweeter side, but there's some really nice complexity to it. So you're just drinking, you're watching a game, watching TV, you just a nice sipper. It's almost replace your beer with this gluten-free alternative, mindful that it's 11% and not a, you know, 7 to 8% sort of beer. And then we've made 18% glorious fruit meads that are just absolutely wonderful. That, for me, end of the night, little piece of dark chocolate from Dunmore Candy Kitchen, and the Dista Dreams are fantastic afterwards.
So is it kind of like, is it on its way to becoming a cordial?
Yeah, at that point, that's a perfect descriptor. At that point, you're thinking cordial. To me, and I think
like
about
I drink
port.
A port.
Yep, that's yeah. it. Yep, it's a nice port substitute. So dinner's over, little glass of that. Particularly, it's really sweet, but balanced by, because we're using real fruit, so it's balanced by, like, for the particular one I'm talking about is called Voyage Dans la Lune, Journey to the Moon. It's inspired by the George A. and early silent film. If you ever saw the picture of the bullet coming in and hitting the moon right in the eye or something early pioneer of special effects. So yeah, folk here in video should know this work here. So that inspired us to make this black currant, red currant, black raspberry, red raspberry, sweet and tart cherry, and I'm missing some blackberry. Honey wine, so it was like 400 pounds of fruit, 400 pounds wow. of honey, and it came out to this glorious 18% cordial or port.
And does it have the mouthfeel of a yeah. cordial, that sort of thick, silky?
Some viscosity there, definitely, but not syrupy. It's definitely, you know, you
drink
that,
smooth.
Yeah,
but doesn't have that residue.
Yeah. There's a little bit left to it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The tartness of those fruits though help clean up that finish. So you want to do that next glass.
That's nice.
Yeah. People think mead a lot. Their experience with mead has been Renaissance Fair or some of the offerings at in the past. I would say up until the just like the craft beer movement was. You know, 25 years ago, beer was beer. It was pretty much the same kind of thing. Mead, there was only a couple offerings in the mead space. Now, that same craft brew movement that elevated beer to what it is today, the mead makers have also upped their game.
That's nice because I know years ago I tried it. It was actually just in a craft type store.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had some mead there that was available and they were able to do tastings. And I really wasn't a fan then, but I have recently had a mead that I thought that it tasted nothing like what I remembered mead tasting like. So if that's a sign of how far it's come along, that's really exciting.
Yeah, particularly if you're more of a dry wine drinker, which that's where I live. I want to pair it with food. I brought cheese and crackers because we want to have something with it. I just can't – well, I have and I will, but generally I don't just drink wine or anything by itself. I like food. I like to eat. I like to enjoy it. So we want to make wine, and in our case, honey wines – that will pair with something. And I'm a cheese hound. I just love cheeses. So that's where I'm looking like, what cheese is going to go with this one now?
That's interesting. So is that like a motivator behind building a flavor profile in a mead?
Yeah. So definitely I'm thinking about what food is going to go with what I'm about to make. Albeit most of the stuff we sell, we are Northeast Pennsylvania. I would say this is the land of soda wines, and I'm not dissing any of our friends and family.
Oh.
But people like to drink sweet here.
Yep.
So it's a very limited amount of food you're pairing with that. If you're drinking that during dinner with a steak, then you're not tasting the steak kind of thing. So I do think about it. So our big sellers, though, are that sweet space. They pay the rent. I will sell them all day, and I enjoy them. Most of them I enjoy. There's one we make that is nice, and it also pays the rent. It's a Swedish fish-flavored mead.
Oh.
I can only drink a little bit. It's just not my genetics does not allow me to truly enjoy that. But it was our bestseller last year, which I would have lost the bet on that one.
I mean, you're right. From my experience here, you're right. The sweeter wines are more popular among the mass. But I do think we have a pretty good population of people who actually appreciate the drier, the true pairings. It's just they need to know where to go.
Well, exactly. And that's where our biggest challenge has been getting past people's stereotype of mead. It's made with honey, therefore it's sweet. And I'll usually come back and say, well, you drink Welch's grape juice. That's sweet. That doesn't constitute what all wine profiles are like, right? So it's the same thing. So, in fact, like I said before, we have a lot more flexibility to create a far more broader range of flavor profiles than you typically see in the grape wine space. We're adding spices. We're adding different fruits. We're adding coffee. You're adding hops. I mean, there's so much more that we're doing because we're more inspired from craft breweries. In fact, that's why we called Space Time. We like... My last name, Schreffler. Show Schreffler Winery. That's not sexy, is it? You know, it's not.
Sounds farm like.
Yeah, yeah. If I was in Schuylkill County, where all the Schrefflers used to live and stuff, maybe it would give me some added edge. But I live in Dunmore, so it's Irish and Italian. So if I would name it O'Schreffarelli, maybe.
Nice.
Maybe that would work. But we wanted to do something that would really stand out, and Space Time, and then. This gives us so much more, I say, freedom to play, you know, from, like I said, the sophisticated to the truly fun, silly.
Is that the foundation of the brand? Like fun? Like what, you know, how do you, there's something to that Space Time mead, plus your energy, you know, you couple those things together. If I'm imagining the brand is a reflection of you, then it's got to have this sort of fun, probably a bunch of puns, like just all kinds of, you know.
Yeah. So the name almost demanded to be called this, and there's a joke with my crew that everywhere in the multiverse, it's called Space Time Mead, except for one place where they called it Schreffler's Winery, and Schreffler's Winery is out of business. So it had to be called this. We're taking mead, the oldest alcohol beverage on the planet, but people don't know what it is. So we're like time travelers reintroducing this thing. It's like, hey, here's this really cool drink from prehistoric times. Right. I mean, busted open hive, rainfall, natural yeast, happy juice. I mean, that was it. There was no intervention. I mean, just think about it. It's just, hey, what's this? That's good stuff. As opposed to beer needs to be brewed. I guess you could say the same thing with like rotting grapes in a pile of water or something. But the honey and the beehives, more plausible story. And then we looked about what are we actually selling? We sell wine. Okay, well, what's about wine? When people go to buy a bottle of wine, it's usually about time and place. So, hey, I'm going to get together. I'm going to propose to hopefully that significant other. I'm going to the beach. So, time and place. I want something special. We're going to grandpa's house. I haven't seen him in like a couple of years. He's up at the lake house. Time and place. It always seems that when someone's buying a bottle that we're coming in, it is always about a moment and a place, and we wanted to make sure we had a broad enough palette or a product offering for that. So again, time traveler, time and place.
Picnic, whatever.
Yeah, and then it was the right time in my life. This location we found in Dunmore just popped up, time and place. It's like, oh my gosh, we have to do it. And then it's like, oh, this gives me the perfect excuse because at the end of the day, it's an excuse for me to be geek. So all the labels are science fiction or science fact related. We just have so much fun. We know our demographics. Right away, we know we have a built-in demographic of Dungeon Dragons players, video gamers.
The Renaissance people.
Renaissance fair, modern Norse pagans. And then there's people that are really, they're geeks at heart. I mean, they're playing Skyrim and they're drinking, you know, the mead. They're making mead in Skyrim, the game. And all this pop culture, Vikings and Game of Thrones and all this other stuff. So we already knew that audience. And we're going to play that audience. We're going to lean into that. And then to get other folk who aren't familiar with mead. And then, all right, then we tell a story. And pretty much we just say, hey, try this. And you had mead. You had someone else's mead. You didn't have ours. Give us a shot. Try it. And they're like, and a lot of times, they're like, I just don't like honey. Fine. Got it. Yeah. You tried it. Try our ciders. And then some folks are like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. We always thought mead was cloying or sweet or whatever. And then I pull out something a little more sophisticated, and they're like, oh my gosh, you're thinking about what they're pairing that thing with. And I'm like, okay, win, we got it. Yeah.
That's nice. I mean, do you find that there's a foodie crowd element to this?
Yeah. Yeah. People are pretty passionate about, and they'll come in and it'll bring, sometimes they're making their own stuff. They're bringing in, they're making their version of meads, or they're doing some sort of kombuchas or whatever. It's a really neat community. Which is a lot different from my prior life, which was in corporate America. I mean, this it's a night and day atmosphere with that. But yeah, the people are generally coming to our shop, what I would call mead hunters. They're interested in craft things. They're building their own prop replicas. They're building old type stoves to make some sort of mead. They're really truly artisan and craft folk that are interested in learning and interested in new things. And it's just a natural crowd for us, and we love it because we learned so much and such great conversations that went for people that are coming in.
Now, are people able to get involved in the production process?
Yeah, we've actually, because of that, we started offering a private mead making experience. So you can book a weekend. It's up to our space is 740 square foot. We're in a shoebox of a winery. We're not a nano winery. We're a pico winery. It is small, so we're really comfortable to work around tanks. It's about three people. So for $100. Two people come in, we talk about what they, you know, what mead is, we do a little pairing, we do some samplings of different varietals of honey, and they'll make a batch of mead, and if it turns out well, which so far they have, we put their name on a label and we sell it, and they get a couple bottles too.
Is there an ideal aging process for mead in particular, like oak barrels, steel barrels, like, you know, or everything, all of the above?
All the above. Yeah, it just depends what I when you ask me what my title was, president winemaker, really the better title is I'm a yeast enabler. I'm a yeast wrangler because I don't make the wine. It's a natural process. We're putting microbes in to do a ideally controlled rotting, a controlled fermentation. Sorry, marketing wise, right. Ignore the rotting. It's fermentation, but that's really what it is. You're letting nature really happen. We just happen to put it in a vat and capture the alcohol and the sweetness and flavor profiles. So I might have an intention what I want this to be. 6 months, it's going to tell me what it is. And we're gonna adapt to that. So
is that the ideal time? 6 months?
Yeah, for us. And I'm not trying to bang product out. So we built up enough that I probably could get stuff out in 4 months if I really wanted to push it and do some stuff. But we let it go. So for us, on average, it's 8 months. But we had stuff. In fact, I still have stuff from 2019 sitting. It's just not ready. And some of it's out in barrels. Most of it's in stainless, some of it with stainless with oak staves we put in, and some of it's just stainless and it just needs to mellow out because the alcohol content or flavor profile or something's just, it's to me, it's not ready. And so either we'll wait till it's ready or we'll find something that we're going to blend beautiful with. So a lot of the things is just kind of, I'm more laid back. Like I said, I used to work for corporate America and that was, you know, here's your date, thump, make it happen, bang it out, we'll wait for phase two later. Well, I don't have any of that. I could wait till it's done and completion, and while that sits, we're going to work on the next thing.
Now, do you find that the overall taste throughout the process is progressive, or like can you like notably taste the progression like throughout?
Yeah, and it depends, just like grape wines. There's some grape wines you want to drink soon. You don't want to age them. So I would say lower alcohol whites, you're pretty much, if you're buying a grape wine, you're buying that and you're drinking it. You're not going to cellar that.
Yeah.
Versus a higher alcohol, big flavorful red. So and we have the same thing with our meads. There's a couple meads, lower alcohol. It's like, please, just drink that within a year. Now, nothing will go bad. It's just it will go past its peak, and it will be all right. You still drink it. We won't dump it. But it's just not what it's meant to be. Time and place. When's the time to drink this? And some of them are, drink now, drink soon. And there's others that I tell people, particularly the Voyage d'Anzalone, in fact, and we just did a strawberry moon. We beautiful fortified strawberry mead. We got brandy from Lang Distillery, LBC. Nice. They made us some brandy. We fortified it, and that you could, you know, take a sip, let it sit there for a couple more months, take another sip, and that will last for how long, and it will change. And my perspective, it gets better as it sits there too, just like a nice aged port, sherry or something.
Yeah. But if somebody were to just buy, one of the random bottles, mm-hmm. right? Is it good for a long time? If you store it the same way you would wine?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We just celebrated, last June was our fifth anniversary. So I pulled out 5-year-olds. So when we first started, we said, all right, I'm going to put a couple cases away and we're going to see what happens. We're going to do that test so we could actually say it. And we had an off dry blueberry mead. We got blueberries this was from New Jersey, classic blueberry farms in New Jersey. I forget how many pounds, but we fermented on whole blueberries, local wildflower honey, and local for us is Murphy's Bee Farm or Beekeeper's Daughter. Those are our two sources of honey. We fermented it, and it came. Our intent was to make a replacement for a red grape wine without grape, and it's beautiful, and it aged 5 years beautifully too. And we did some oaking. There was some natural tannings in the blueberry skin since we aged it on it. Some of the seeds that extracted some of those same compounds. And boy, it really held up really, really well. So we definitely have some good examples. There's some other bottles we pulled of it was a type of Sizer, which is an apple honey wine. So more of akin to a white wine. A couple of bottles of those started to oxidize more. So they had more of a 3-year lifespan. And then after three, the peak started going down. So, and we have stuff we're saving for our 10th anniversary. We're optimistic.
Now, once you open a mead, same lifespan as like a wine?
Yep.
Probably drink it within a couple of days, that's it?
Depends on the alcohol content again. Most of the meads we sell are under 375 milliliters, which is roughly 13 ounces. Think 12-ounce beer bottles. So generally, there's two glasses out of that. So people are generally drinking those. We do some of the larger bottle formats too. And the same thing. Put a cork or cap back in, stick it in the refrigerator, and then it's good for a week. And it's actually sometimes some of our tasters in our cooler, which is set to only 55 degrees, they'll last for 4 weeks in there, and they're fine. Because we'll taste them before we give it to the customer. I'm like, oh, still good.
Any thoughts on cooking with mead?
I haven't done it. People have asked us about that. I'm trying to get my crew, who are more foodies and cookers than chefs, than I am, and I just haven't done anything with it. The opportunities there. Cocktails are there with the meads too. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm a novice in the space yet. I started making mead in 2008 because I was a geek. And then really it was until, I'd say, 2017 where I really felt confident that we nailed the process. We're building quality and haven't really thought much about pairing. There is a brilliant book on it, and I wish I could remember the title. And I think it just might be Food and Meat or something along that line. Glorious, almost textbook-like book that I'm reading all the time. And it's mostly pairings, though, but there's some talking about cooking with it. I haven't done it, so I encourage anyone to give me ideas.
I mean, here's an idea for you, because this is always like a solid go-to when my wife and I are having like friends over or we're just kind of doing a quick thing and you're not sure, I don't know, do you get a cake? I don't know, do you get like pie? I don't know, maybe that's just too much. What's really kind of honed in and turned into like a really nice dessert that I can't imagine it wouldn't be excellent is you take some pears, cut them in half, right? Peel them, cut them in half, and throw them in a crock pot.
Oh.
You dump the bottle of mead right over it.
And
you let it just sit there and 2-3 hours goes by. That pear has absorbed all of that.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And then you serve it hot and you put a scoop of vanilla ice cream right over the top.
That sounds wonderful.
It's outstanding. I don't know what it would taste like with mead, but thinking about it being a honey foundation, it'd be like,
same thing. The only folk have suggested on ice cream, we made a vanilla mead, we made a coffee mead, and we make a maple syrup wine. And everyone has suggested pouring those as a drizzle on top of it. But I think cooking with the pears or an apple or something like that to really pull that flavor in as part of that. That sounds actually wonderful.
I would also wonder too that I can't help but think like if you took a bottle of the maybe pear flavored, where you're having some of those fruits that you would find complementary to pork. I would almost love to do like you do with like a port and then create a reduction.
Yeah.
And really get it down to its like thickest form and then use that on like drizzle that over like a pork, like a stuffed pork roast or something, or like a pork loin.
My memory is terrible because we make something called, it's called an Acerglin, which is a maple syrup honey wine. They could be co-fermented, or in our case, what we do is we blend them together and dilute them. And people have talked about using as a glaze on top of a pork dish or something along that line.
Even on salad.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As a reduction, it's like really good. I've got pork reduction on purpose, but I love it when I make it on my own. And it's just, you know, I've done it with different wines now, moved from port. I've actually tried it with like a Chardonnay where I really brought it down and made like a thick, like it was like a thicker wine sauce for a fish. And it was.
Life is good.
Oh,
life is
so good.
Good.
So good, man. So, yeah. Yeah. But I'm trying to think about the profile. I never cooked with mead, and yet I love cooking, so it seems like that would be something fun to do.
Yeah, and we'll have to talk about that more, because we definitely have the crew that would be interested in exploring that. I just haven't had the time.
And boy, wouldn't it be cool if, like, chefs in the area then could catch on and, like, start to use your product for cooking and get it on their menus, because that's a neat thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's something you don't see, like a mead reduction, blah, blah, blah. You know, it'd be like, oh, I think I got to order that.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, it's really neat. You said it's a smaller place. Do you have regular events?
No. So our model is we're a production winery that we carved off some tasting room space. When we first opened, we had seats, just like 8 seats. We had a stand up bar. We would do formal tastings or by the glass. COVID came and gave us a chance to figure out really what we could and couldn't do. And I'll be honest, we didn't miss it. I like making mead. So small business. As a mead maker, it's only 20% of my time. The rest of it is running the business. And in fact, I tell people, don't ruin a good hobby. Keep making mead. Keep your day job, generally, unless you have the financial freedom to do this. So for us, I said, I don't want to be a bartender. At the end, I love people. I don't want to be a bartender. It's like, I don't want to sit and wait for people to finish a glass.
Right.
I have stuff to do. So, and it sounds selfish and that long that line.
I don't think so. You're running a business.
Yeah.
So,
and then we have staff. The space is just tiny. We're talking about a 12 by 12 space. It's not a lot
of
room.
This room.
Yeah. So imagine a couple chairs and then wine racks and then people coming in looking for bottles and there's people sitting.
Yeah.
It just wasn't the environment for us. So we pulled the chairs. Really, it was about 5% of our business. So it wasn't anything we really missed. We have a lot more fun going into the community and going into their space. So Northeast Horror Film Festival or the different we sponsor the local roller derby team, the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton Roller Radicals.
That's so fun.
Oh, that's they're what a wonderful group of folk. They do a fall like flea market, punk rock flea market or something. Those are the events we like to go to. And for us, so people are sampling out there. There's food and everything because we don't have room for food. Our parking's tight. And none of it's really a complaint. It's just limitations of what we have with our space. We love the space. 6 blocks from my house. I love my commute.
Ah, that's great.
My rent's good. I love my landlord. I mean, I don't have a lot of I'm not worried about paying the rent every month. Oh my gosh, because it's exorbitant. So we have a really good foundation. It's like, all right, who's drinking where? Like, we'll send them up to the last minute in Scott Township. They have our meat and cider there. Let them drink it there. They have a food truck. That's the environment. We don't have to be that. We don't have to try to compete with that space. It's like, let's provide either the Hopping Eagle or Sabatini's or something along that line. People are used to going there. Let's not try to be me too in that space. So, and that gave us a lot of freedom to say, okay, now we know what we're not doing. A lot of that pressure's off. And then let's really focus in on what we do want to do, which is getting people in to sample, buy a couple bottles, and I'm going to send you to Lucci's or I'm going to send you to Malatesi's or someone else to really have that laid-back experience. Enjoy mine at home.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said before, right? Picking it up for the right place, right time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're more of like a come get our product, take it to wherever you're going.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's great. I mean, you can taste.
Oh,
right?
God. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We offer sampling. Definitely offer sampling. Yeah. And that could be what I call splash of glass, or we'll do the more formal guided tour, you know, kind of. But either of those experiences are good. And really, we want you to understand, you know, I want to find out what you like to drink, and we're going to pair up either the mead, a cider, or maple wine that fits that space. We didn't want to run a restaurant. That's a different business. I didn't want to run a bar. That's a separate business. I want to run a winery. And actually, I want to sell mead. And so that's where we're focused on it and as efficiently as possible. And for that efficiency for us is not having to run pretty much that restaurant, bar, pub kind of dining environment.
So mead is your primary focus, but you also do
cider.
And I heard you say maple
wine?
We do a
maple wine. Maple ferments, the process is very similar to making a honey wine. So we get maple syrup, and we've been sourcing it from Locke's Maple Farm up in a little bit above Tunkhannock, Springville. We dilute maple syrup with water, and at that point, it's the same process.
Is it a very obvious maple taste?
Yeah. And if you like maple, it's absolutely brilliant. If you don't like maple, you're not going to like it.
Are you adding sugar to it?
No.
So it's just what you're...
We don't add sugar to anything.
So you're only using honey, or you're only using maple in what you're making?
Yeah, or the actual fruit juices. So some of the meads, we, instead of using water to dilute it, we'll actually get either a press of apple juice. We'll get grape juice or something like that. We'll use something else to dilute it. Usually it's water, but we will never add sugar. We just don't do it. Every flavor that you get out of us is the actual fruit or the spice. The exception being is the Swedish fish one. No Swedish fish were ever harmed in the making of our Swedish fish mead.
Well, that's good. That's good. We need that little disclaimer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it's there's no reason, because we have total control over the sweetness content just by how much honey or maple syrup we're using up front.
So that's really interesting, because in a lot of maybe some of the nutritional programs that people are following, sugar is like a huge concern.
Well, maples and honey is just sugar. It's fructose and sucrose.
But it's natural, and it's in that sense. Not added sugar.
Yeah, it's true. I always tell people, because we get a number of folks that I'm diabetic. I really want something that's not so sweet. And then it's like, well, you shouldn't have alcohol at all. That's the first thing I'm telling them. You shouldn't be drinking alcohol. It's like, well, I want it. It's like, okay, well, here's our drink. I don't like they're drinking sweets. Like, I feel like I'm enabling bad habits. So right. At the end of the day, I realize I sell mild poisons. I'm making alcohol. So I get it. And so I want full disclosure on what we do. But we want to limit as much anything, quote unquote, natural flavors. I mean, sometimes these natural, blueberry natural flavoring has never been around a blueberry.
Right.
And those things we avoid. We're using the real fruit. And that's more expensive for us. But
yeah, but that's people really appreciate
it. It matters. It matters to me.
It matters to me, too.
Yeah, yeah. And there's talk right now about the having labeling, almost an ingredient list on tobacco wines now is actually something that's up. And there's a big debate in the community because I'm welcome. I'm ready to put it on now.
I was going to say, it benefits you.
Yeah, for me, I want full disclosure. People should know what's in it. And if you're afraid of what people will say when they read the label, then maybe you shouldn't be using it. Yeah, kind of perspective. And a lot of people don't care either. That's fine. Yeah, but
I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people who don't care. But I think today there are more people who are starting to focus on that. And it's just because the information is accessible to us more so than it ever was.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're starting to understand reading labels is important. I mean, we were just talking about it not too long ago. It's like, what is it, like 60 or 70% of our foods and products are banned everywhere else in the world. So it's like we should be concerned about this stuff.
Yeah, and as someone – so I went through a bout of cancer 12 years ago, colon cancer, and everything's fine. It's great. I had the best of care in Northeast Pennsylvania. I count my blessings. I face all the deities and thank them, and I thank modern technical and science and the doctors and the nurse and all that for – but – so I have a genetic predisposition to both Both sides of my family, grandparents have died from that. But also our diet. I mean, we're looking right now where we're seeing a whole bunch of people diagnosed with colon cancer under 45.
It's crazy.
They're trying to figure out what it is. In large degree, it's the processed food we're eating.
Yeah.
People got to read labels. And you know, for me, it's as close to the ground as possible. So close to the hoof or close to the stem. But everything else is – what is blah, 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 blah.
Right, yeah.
And so that's what I'm looking, I don't want to put anything extra than what, if I can't pick it and I don't see the bees making it or the trees tapping, then it shouldn't be in our wine.
Well, I love that.
In fact, our clarifiers, so we, just winemaking, so we add yeast, natural product. There's yeast nutrient, so there's chemical forms of that, pretty much like diammonium phosphate and some other stuff. We seeked out a vegan source of that, which is made pretty much from dead yeast hulls. I mean, so again, natural source, so we use that as a nutrient. And then wine then is usually clarified. A couple ways of clarifying it. A lot of times they're using something called ketosan, which is a shellfish-derived product. So right away now if you know, want to approach vegetarian or vegan market – well, that shouldn't be on your list of ingredients. So we have a source of, again, well, in this case, it's produced by a fungus called Aspergillus niger, which produces a substitute for that ketosan. So everything we use other than honey is vegan. It's all gluten-free, just by definition. There's no gluten in honey. There's no gluten in apples or any of the fruit. We don't do anything with grains at all. So we're trying to, and we'll give the customers asking, we give them the full sheet of here's everything we add into our wine so they can make the decision of whether they want to drink it or not. And that, there's no reason why we should inform our community what they're about to take into their body.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really big because, like I said, there's more and more people who are just more aware. I mean, I never really cared. And then, you know, I'm in my mid 40s now, and I'm like back pain, this feeling like garbage over here, weight gain, and I'm like, man, I gotta really figure out what's going on here. And it's not just my behavior; it's quite literally like more than that. And then you dive in and you find out that if you read the labels, if you follow things, and you look at what you're putting in your mouth. Right, you start to realize like I could actually live a healthy life and feel good by just watching.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, then, you know, of course, once you start to wrap your head around that and you realize that these things matter, all of a sudden you start to have an appreciation for all the companies that go out of their way to make sure that they are not putting in all those other things. And then I'm like, yeah, so maybe you got to pay a little bit of a premium, which is totally ass backwards, in my opinion, right? Is that things are more expensive if they're healthier.
Yeah.
But I just think that it's worth the investment into something. You know, you pay a couple of dollars difference, but you're getting something healthy. And it's nice to know that here we have a local company that's doing something that, you know, even to your point, you're like, no, if I can't see it, I can't feel it. If I don't know where it's coming from, it's not going in my mead.
If I can't pronounce it.
If I can't pronounce it, right.
Yeah, food is medicine. At the end of the day, food is medicine. Diet and exercise is a lot cheaper. You know, pound of an ounce of prevention, pound of cure. And we see our healthcare costs skyrocketing.
Sick care, you mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah. What's a standard American diet? The SAD, and it's called SAD for a reason. And that doesn't mean, I'm not saying people deprive themselves, and we're not saying just eat lettuce. I mean, no, you always get that knee jerk reaction.
Right.
It's like, no, I eat a really good diet, but I know I'm not buying packaged food.
Yeah.
I'm going to the butcher shop, or I'm talking.
You know where your food's coming from.
I know where it's coming from, and I know what is and isn't being added to it. And instead of getting whatever the mix in the microwavable, I'll chop up some carrots. It's not that big of a deal, you know?
Well, and it's also to have an appreciation of what happens beyond just your health, but also the stimulant that you provide to the local community, local farms, right? These are people who are struggling.
Yeah.
And it's all because we go for the fast answer to go to the grocery store. Now, right, I get it. Some of the grocery stores are owned by local people.
Yep.
But in some of those places who are owned by local people will actually focus on trying to get local product.
Yep.
The bigger name boxes, right, they don't have time.
They don't.
It's all in and out, in and out, in and out.
Yep.
Right. And so, but it is nice though if we can kind of think beyond what's just like what we're eating. If we could just convenience, think beyond convenience. Think a little bit more specifically about the bigger picture, and know that not only one are you able to eat healthier. You know where your product is coming from. Also, that's something I was really surprised and learned about this past year is that you should eat where you are from, right? The idea that your honey should come from the region that you're from.
Yeah.
It's healthy. It's healthier. It's healthier, yeah. Better for your immune system. It's everything is sort of, what was it? Somebody said, wherever you are in this world, for whatever ailment you may experience in nature, within some level of geographic reach is the cure.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And it's because it's typically for every, it's like regional.
Yeah.
Right. So like if you get bit by a certain bug, there's a plant that's relatively close by that will solve that problem for you.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to think like that. But the more you dive into it, you find that that's pretty true. And so then you think about locally here, like we have the local honey, right? That's great. If you can get honey local, then that's amazing. But also all of our farmers that have vegetables that are growing on northeastern Pennsylvania soil.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're not treating it. They're not spraying it. They're doing everything that they could so that they can get that product out. Crazy, crazy thing we were just learning, working with somebody, Clancy Harrison, she has the Food Dignity Project, and it's amazing what she's doing because she's really trying to help stimulate local farms. So she does these booths where she sets up, and it's pay what you can. So she pays the farm for produce, then she goes and sets up a stand and tries to. It's all you have to do is come up with an envelope. If it just says thank you in it, that's fine. But you get produce that's from a local farm, and you take it home. And what I love about that is that there's this stimulant to the local farms.
Mm-hmm.
There's this your the people who can afford it are still getting it. The people who can typically will give a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the idea of this sort of like system that starts to play itself out, and it helps take care of our local farms. And gets nutrients into the homes of people. But I thought the other thing that I found was interesting is that throughout this, you know, sort of, I guess you can say research and stuff that we were doing with her, it was to find out that like better than 40% of every local crop goes to waste.
We're a wasteful nation.
It's like 60% goes to, it gets sold, but there's literally... So if 1,000 pounds, 400 pounds of food will go to waste.
Yep,
it'll just rot.
It ends up in our landfill in Dunmore. So,
isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, from our crops, from our local farms in particular.
Yeah,
and it's like they're making it, but we can't figure out how to help them get sell that.
Yeah. Because you go to Scranton Farmers Market, so you go at the end of this, and you know there's how many heads of whatever sitting there, and they're like, I don't know, is that going to last until the next market day, or
yeah.
Where's that going? Is it going to feed?
Yeah, I mean the grocery stores will typically ditch it, and then maybe it makes its way to a farm for slop for the pigs or whatever. But I mean the local farms, I mean they end up having to basically grind it up and try to use it back into the soil again, but all of that food, nobody's eating it.
No, and I mean, so you look at us in the United States, how lucky we are to be born in whatever zip code we were born in this. And I never had a day where I went hungry unless I was being punished by mom.
You know? Right.
But otherwise, so I, and that, and not, you know, a good portion of the planet can't say that kind of thing. So I count my blessings. So when we first opened 6 years ago, on the wall is a set of guiding principles. And you know, it's really about the four P's. Profit, of course. We're running a business. I'm a capitalist. I'm definitely in for making money. I'm not doing this as a charity.
Sure.
But also a business with purpose. We're concerned for the planet and also concerned for people. So that's people that work for us, to treat them right and fairly with dignity. And also in the community that we treat everyone the same. Sometimes say you treat everyone like you're just a rude guy. No. So around the food part, we said we are going to source as much local ingredients as possible. Now, there's something we can't get cinnamon or oranges in Pennsylvania. So we know that. Now, we're actually getting smart to try to see, can we get substitutes for some of those flavors that are grown, either like herbs like lemon balm or something else that get that flavor profile. We are Northeast Pennsylvania's only designated Pennsylvania preferred winery. There's a number of Pennsylvania preferred wineries in Pennsylvania. I believe we're the only one in Northeast Pennsylvania because we source the majority of our ingredients within not only Pennsylvania, but I say within 40 miles of the winery. So we know the growers. They become friends. These folk are wonderful. And people 6 years ago I didn't know. And now, oh my gosh, can't wait to see them. Go pick up my buckets of honey from Murphy's up the road and then see Hannah down at Beekeeper's Daughter or Kenner's and getting some apples off him. This is an opportunity I didn't have in corporate America. And those relationships, I mean, we're always saying buy local. But as a business, if I'm not buying local, am I being a hypocrite? I need to support local. So I want people to buy Dunmore wine, fine mead and cider made by Dan, and we'll source that honey, that maple, whatever fruit, as close to the community as possible because those dollars just stay in the community then, and that'll benefit everyone.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that more people need to learn. Have you checked out Pocono Organics?
Not yet. I'm aware of them. So far, our circle has been pretty good for what we're looking for, so I've been able to stay pretty hyper-local for most of our stuff. We're lucky. Scranton Farmers Market, the growers are coming to us.
That's good.
So and then Miller's Orchard, and again, I mentioned the beekeepers and the maple syrup guys, and then we're looking at a couple other – actually, we do an urban harvest every year. So customers, whatever's growing in my backyard, friends, or someone just calls up, hey, I got these things growing. You want them? Like, yeah, we'll go up and pick them. And then we just freeze them all. And then once a year, we just put them all together and ferment, and we make a harvest meet every year and see how it turns out.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun. And we meet, again, another opportunity to meet some really cool people. You know, life is good.
I mean, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
So you said you were in the corporate world before?
Yeah, I worked for MetLife Insurance Company for 26 years. Great company. I wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing without having worked for them and built financial freedom to allow me to do this more of idealistic binge. We're making money. We're almost profitable, I mean, but it was through MetLife. And I learned so much. Talk about if someone wants to go into business, learn on someone else's dime. I learned at MetLife, you think about running a small business, and if I took a sick day, well, I'm not making money. Take it at MetLife, I get paid that day.
Right.
2 week vacation, I get paid for that. 401ks, pensions, all that other stuff. So that corporation helped me so much to be able to do what I'm able to do now. That I haven't ruined a good hobby by being stressing over whether or not I'm going to pay the bills or that. I love Met. When I was sick with cancer and came back, they treated me fantastically. Come back, work how many days you want to work. We'll work with you. They just were wonderful. It's just that when I came back, it wasn't fulfilling. So you go through something like cancer, and and people have heard the story. Everyone knows me, heard the story about there's a couple side effects. So there's some physical limitations. So for me, it was chemo brain. So keeping at an executive level of like, quick, what was the budget number for this? And I'm like, I'm going to look it up. And how come you don't know that? I'm like, so sometimes I didn't get the benefit. There's still a level that we had it at work at a corporate world, and I get it. This is the job. And then the other side effect is impatience. It's like life is short. Let's not waste this time we have. And last is perspective. And so when I went back, it's like, is this how I want to retire? Do I want to leave out of a cubicle working for some VP of the year, whatever, with the organizational changes? And it's like, nah, don't want to.
A quality of life, right?
Yeah, it really was quality of life. And when I was going, as soon as I went into college, I worked for Franklin's Restaurant. I don't know if you remember the Franklin's Restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, the spinoff from the big boys and a big boy, LB's or whatever it was. Wonderful job. I learned so much. I mean, that interaction, you're out of the high school thing. I learned a lot through my uncle. He taught me electrical and the value of work and all that. But really, working with different people and trying to understand, you know, all these things. You grow up, pretty much you grew up in those jobs.
Sure.
And I would see people at the counter and just looked beaten down and like, you know, this whatever they're
defeated,
yeah,
right?
Just like, it's like just trying, all right, just another day. And I'm like, I do not want to be that person. Yeah. How do I not be that person? And one is lucky enough to be go to college, and I first in our family to go to college. We lived in West Hazleton. We lived with my grandparents. My parents divorced when I was young, so we were all crammed into this small little house. But I was taught the value of work, and it's like, yeah, you want something, you gotta put your head down. And I was early on learned that we don't need things. Things become handcuffs, and so then you're living for things. And so I was pretty good at saving and at knowing at some point, ideally at 45, I said I'd want to free myself from the really work, and then really hopefully by then I know what I want to be when I grow up. Well, that was delayed at 45. I was diagnosed with cancer, so that kind of delayed it. But if it didn't happen with cancer being a blessing at that time for me was really stop me and slap me upside the head and say, listen, I want to remind you of that promise to yourself back how many years ago, because I was a workaholic. I would probably still be working at Med if that event didn't happen. I would still be down and working 60 hours a week and like making money, but then it would like, you know. Rah, rah,
rah, rah. Sure.
Yeah.
You're in the rat race.
Yeah. So, the other perspective I had was my mom in 2000 got really sick, and it was a 17 years of just in and out of hospital and suffering. And I'm like, you don't know when something's going to happen. She had just retired from working at the bank, ready to celebrate that retirement, and then get sick. And it was just like, so you don't know. It's like, so how do you make sure you set yourself up as best as possible? I mean, health is a blessing, but as best as possible to hopefully do what you're enjoying. And the circumstance where you can. I count my blessings every day where I was able to do this. But even if you're in a situation, at least find some joy on a day-to-day basis. But those experiences said, all right, in 2017, it's like my mom passed away, and I'm like, it's time to go. We're done. Six months later, I quit MetLife. Spent 9 weeks cross country. My wife and I drove out. We visited ballparks and national parks and wineries and breweries, trying to figure out what do I want to be when I grow up. My wife had to go back. She works as a teacher, so she had to go back in August to teach. And I said, well, you know, the eclipse is only a couple weeks away. I'm going to stay out here. You mind? She said, no, go ahead. So I spent another 5 weeks by myself just going up the glacier and just trying to figure out, you know, it was almost that trying to find oneself, that cliche kind of thing, and talk to some mead makers and wineries and like, you know, I really like mead. There's an opportunity for this. I'm like, eh.
What about that? What were you drawn to?
Well, I was making mead since 2008, so I really liked the product. I thought I was going to open up a brewery originally. When I got diagnosed with cancer and came back, I thought, well, I'm going to open up a brewery. And then like, well, there's a lot of breweries. What's different? What is that niche product? And like, at the time, there was probably only about 10 meaderies in Pennsylvania, and there was probably less than 400 in the United States. I mean, it's a small market.
Sure.
And the closest one to us was either Colony Meadery, which fantastic folk down in the Allentown area, or Earl Estates up in New York. Those were the only two. I'm like, well, let's roll the dice and do this here.
I have a quick question, and I'm wondering. So when you say that you're making mead, mm-hmm. but you're actually making honey wine.
Same.
Right? But does the public respond different if it's referred to one versus the other?
There is a common Irish mead that's M-E-A-D-E, Bunratty. That is what people think a honey wine and mead is, but it's actually just a white grape wine with honey added. And that also gives people a bad perspective what mead is. And not dissing them. It's nice if you like that drink. But I think that people have equated honey wine to that. Legally, I can only put the word mead, M-E-A-D, on something that's nothing but honey and water fermented. As soon as I put anything else in it, it becomes honey wine. So we do a lot of education to folk of that mead and honey wine are the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm curious. I'm just curious as to like, because you know how we say the market is so small in relativity to wineries, breweries, right? You think about how many places make mead across the United States. And I'm curious, because of the image and stigma that is around it, like we talked about, the idea that there's this sort of Renaissance vision, this ha! And, you know, I mean, it wasn't helped by, what was it, Bud Light that ran that commercial?
They totally confused people.
And they're like, mead? And then, you know, he gets banned. And it's like this idea that there's we all have this vision of what mead is. But if you say honey wine, it almost sounds like that's not threatening, or like there's not like a, and I say that in a way, not that mead is threatening, but
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, mead has a perception. It's in, yeah, Budweiser didn't do us any favors because people think mead's a type of beer now. And I'm like, no, it has no gluten in it, because people, it was on a beer ad. It, you know, they're talking about their autumnal mead, whatever. So, we spend a lot of time educating folk about what mead or honey wine is. So to me, it's the same battle. It doesn't matter what we call it. But yeah, some people will have a knee-jerk reaction to mead, and the mead folk have a knee-jerk reaction to honey wine, because so it's interesting, the dance I do.
What I think would be interesting is almost like a 100-person survey. Right. And you go, we surveyed 100 people and asked them, would you like to try mead? And we also surveyed 100 people and asked them, would you like to try our brand new honey wine? I almost would be willing to lay a bet that the percentage of people that would agree to take the honey wine would be greater than the people who would be willing to try mead.
That would be a fair exercise to try. When we do any marketing or explanation, we always say mead parentheses honey wine. I mean, right away we just tie them together, hopefully getting past the, you know, the stigma of the word. We don't see too much reaction. Generally, the reaction is, I've had mead, I didn't like it, because they had bad mead.
Well, that's what I'm telling you. I think when it was sort of first making its comeback, if you will, right? I had that, and it was terrible then, right? Now, I've had a good one since, so I know that there's good mead, right? Yeah. But I never thought that I would ever want that again, because it was just a lousy, thick taste.
Yeah.
And it almost kind of had like a I guess the best way that I could explain it was, is that when I had it, it felt like it was like a little bit of like a spicy, thick tea.
Yeah. It's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I say spicy, not as in like peppery or hot. It was like spices.
Yeah.
It had the spices. It was like a spiced tea with like a thicker kind of mouthfeel to it.
Yeah.
And I didn't enjoy it then. And, but then I've had a good one, but it's interesting because everybody, right, who goes out to wineries, they'll try everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It'd be funny to be like, try this honey wine. And then they try it, you'd be like, you just drank mead.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
That's an interesting experiment. We'll actually play with that at some events. You know,
it would be fun to do that.
Hey, got some honey wine. Come on over here.
It would almost be funny for you to put all cups in one section and say honey wine samples. Over here, all cups mead samples. And let's see which one gets away first.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah, I would love to see that experiment.
Yeah.
We'll have to do that.
That would be a fun way to educate people.
Yeah. 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 By the way,
that's that.
Yeah.
That's mead. Interesting. Why did you choose that? You know, well, I don't really like mead, but I like wine. Oh, well, tell me what you think.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do for some of the drier ones. We'll see people say, I don't like mead, it's too sweet. I said, well, what do you like to drink? And they'll talk about a grape wine, and like, I'll try to think of flavor profile and say, all right, we'll try this. And they're thinking they're getting, and I usually say, anyone have allergies to honey, by the way, first? I want to make sure that we don't kill someone with this.
Is there many people that have honey allergies?
Some people say they have a reaction. My wife, she can't have raw honey. She's allergic to bees, so if she gets any. So, but fermented, it shouldn't be an issue. But people, you know, like if I don't want to, someone thinks they have an issue and we give them something, it doesn't matter.
I'm dying.
Does it have sulfites? Yeah, my gosh. Even though small percent of the planet actually has a sulfite allergy.
Right.
So that, full disclosure, we're not trying to dupe anyone, but a lot of time with that dry one, it's like, boy, she's like, doesn't it taste like a Gewürztraminer wine? Oh my gosh, this is great. What's the grape? Yeah, no grape. It's a honey wine.
How about because you're using such pure ingredients, do you find that it's you're less likely to have a little bit of a hangover from it?
No, you drink enough and don't hydrate, you're going to get a hangover.
And
higher sugar also will compound that. So it's no different than any other.
Some wines will really beat the hell out of you.
Red wines have and they're still trying to figure out the exact chemical. In fact, this is what most people think. They have a sulfite allergy when they're drinking reds. People come in and say, I have a sulfite allergy. I need something with sulfite. And I'll ask them, I said, well, you get a reaction with reds or whites? And they'll say reds. I'm like, well, that's fascinating because whites have more sulfites in it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really whatever the compound is that give the grapes the color.
Is there something about the tannins?
They're leaning away from the tannins now. There's a histamine chemical and some other poly blah, blah, blah that I don't remember.
Sure, sure.
But it's some compound in a red grape wine that is actually causes that reaction, almost like an allergic reaction or something along that line. And I think that also compounds that kind of red wine hangover kind of thing going too. Studies, they're still trying to figure it out. But
well, and here's the question I have, because when it comes down to like red wines, for instance, I haven't had them in a while, but if you were to drink, you know, probably like a cheaper red wine, for sure I was going to get a banger of a headache.
Yeah.
But on the more bougie end of things, if you drank a high-end wine, I found that I wasn't getting, like, so what's the difference between the two?
So so the cheaper wines are, generally they're fermented dry and there's a sweetener added to it to bring the sweetness level back up. That's my guess. And what's being
added sugar.
Some sort of add either sugar or some sort of other glycerin or whatever it is, kind of some augmentation to increase the sweetness. And so for us, we control that by how much honey we put up front, and it ferments, and yeast tells me when it's done. So we control that up front without going back. So again, honey is fructose and sucrose. It's the same as cane, some variants of cane sugar, but we're just not adding it after the fact.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where a lot of the problems lie, is that processed sugar.
Yeah. 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 And that's the same. The same techniques, then, not same techniques, but similar philosophy when we're making our ciders. We've been focused on the ciders now a little bit more than meads. Meads, we knew we had to educate and come out with our A game. So we worked hard to have a variety of meads. We put them in competition. So we got Maser Cup International is our Olympics in a sense. It's our Great American Beer Cup, and we got a couple silvers for stuff, and we have some. So we wanted some street cred, as I would say.
That's cool.
Validation that we know what we're doing.
Is that a national thing?
International. It's an international. Yeah. Yeah.
You got silvers.
Yeah, a couple silver. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So and made with local ingredients. That's even a better story.
Wonderful.
I think we have three right now. American Wine Societies have a mead category, and we have three best of class meads since our 5 years being open. So we know of what we do. I mean, we're scoring double golds or golds. So there's, you know, wine ratings 90 plus for these for what we're producing. So we're serious about what we're making, as much as the name's silly and all that kind of marketing. But I'm very serious about the product that we're making. So the first 5 years was largely focused on the mead space, because I don't want people to walk away from us and saying, I'll never drink mead because I had a bad mead at Space Time. I don't want to be that guy that ruined mead for someone the rest of their life. We're now focusing on ciders. We made some good ciders, but like you go up to Deep Roots, he's making fantastic ciders.
Oh, yeah.
Last Leg, fantastic. Electric City, fantastic stuff. So we were trying to effectively do American ciders, sweet, carbonated, and they weren't coming out because I don't want to add anything afterwards. So ours were coming out dry, but when you're not trying to make that dry product, it's a sweet one that just fermented dry. It's like, all right, well, this is a bad technique. We're not going to do that anymore. 2 years ago, my life is tough. I spent 10 days in Normandy and Brittany with world-class cider makers.
It must have been real hard.
I don't know how I get through it. It was
the sacrifices you made.
Yeah, for the business. It was business. Cider Chat is a great podcast for anyone that's trying to learn how to make ciders. Rhea Wincaller is just a wonderful host, very knowledgeable. She's been in the industry forever, and she runs these cider tours. And we met, like, the tops, like, world-class folk. We're in their barns drinking out of, like, 100-year-old casks, you know, generations and generations of cider making, 400-year-old pear trees and that stuff, which that's older than our country kind of perspective.
That'll put you in the mood.
Yeah, and it's and talking to them and what their approach was, and they just say, we just make use of what we have. We're not trying to source all these different – this is what's always grown here. And there's cider-specific apples, so they have some nice qualities. And I'm like, okay, what can I apply those same techniques, which is largely – no added yeast even. It's whatever's on the skins, natural ferment, little intervention as possible to make a product. And in the States, we say, it's like, oh, my gosh, that's wild ferment. It's a dice roll. What's going to happen?
Right.
So we made our first batch of that in 2022. We got back in September. We only do harvest-driven. When they're pressing the apples, we're getting the juice. We don't get stuff pulled out of it for not again. There's nothing wrong with that, but just our model is make stuff in season, and we use their same techniques. We made 3 French style ciders, 2 silvers at the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition, Cider Craft Magazine honorable mention for our first 3 attempts at a French ciders made with local apples. So Miller's Ritter, sorry, it's Kenair's apples and Pecor's Orchard and why can't I think of the third one? Oh, Russell's up in Susquehanna County. Each one slightly different mix of apples, different whatever is naturally on them, produced 3 separate ciders that were glorious food pairing. Think about Camembert and Brie and something with these
more
things.
Like dry or
drier,
sweet?
Drier. Crisp? Drier, crisper, a little hint of funkiness in each one, but complex in terms of that. Really, really gorgeous. And like, okay, we got lucky the first 3 times. Last year, we had that frost in May. I can no longer get apples from Russell's because his orchards got nailed. Canair's, same thing. That frost in May knocked down his apples. Couldn't get apples from him. I'm like, okay. So what are we going to do? Well, talk to Deep Roots. Where do you get your apples from? Miller's Orchard up, or Miller's Farm in Clark Summit, like, brilliant. Call them up, get 40 gallons, put into the tank, use the same technique, absolutely gorgeous. Something we released this year called Leap Year. Tastes different than the last 3 we made, but it's absolutely gorgeous. Same type of profile. And so just by opening the world view to what is possible, going over and experience outside our own backyard and knowing... I guess that I wanted something different. Well, first of all, I can't drink a lot of those sweet carbonated ciders. I love Sabatini's. I love the 16th Ward. Every time I have cider there, they're generally overly sweet. And I know they sell and they pay the bills, but it's just not what I want to drink when I'm having a cheese platter or whatever food kind of thing. So really, I'm making ciders I want to drink. And people that generally are looking at drier kind of options or something beyond the typical, again, not this in American cider, but these are really hopefully we'll see this year. I'm looking for gold medal for some of the stuff that we're doing right now.
That sounds really great. I always like to say that when I'm looking for a cider, especially for when you're sitting with like a nice charcuterie board, and it's the compliment to it. I always like to I'll tell if I'm at a cidery, I'll say I kind of want the cider that would be like a Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like my best way of explaining it. And they're always like, I know it's exactly which one you want.
That's so you have a good person to be able to answer that question.
Yeah. And Deep Roots was very, very helpful with that.
They're brilliant. Yeah. He's like I said, he inspired me to up my game because they're good.
They're very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. And they have, you know, they have the sweets.
Sure.
But I even like the Christmas, the crispness of, and it's still sweet, but it's very nice, which is the OG that they have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He nails it. They're sweeter, but again, they're not syrupy. It's not over the top. There's a balance to it.
It just washes down, it's like, that has been my go-to for Thanksgiving complimentaries. you know, having that with your turkey or with your apple stuff. And
yeah.
it's like, whoa, man, that's like the perfect cider for that. My wife and I always look forward to that every year. I'll be excited to try yours.
Yeah. We were just up Deep Roots. My first time I was actually in their tasting room, and it, just wonderful place up there. It's pretty.
What a ride too.
Yeah. Right? It's gorgeous. I can't wait to actually see it. Besides that, we went up last or 2 weeks ago, and it was just, you know, sticks and trees, and I can't wait till it actually grows in.
Yeah,
staff's wonderful, the environment's really nice up there, and they're making really, really good cider. So.
It is. We went up as a team trip the one time. We just it wasn't all of us, but like it was a good portion of us, and we all jumped up at the picnic tables. We set up the cheese and the meats, and then we brought out all the bottles, and it was just like a perfect afternoon. Right, our dog was running around there, and it was like, this is really worth the trip up here, and it was really nice. It's nice to know that we have that stuff local.
It's a tough life, right? Yeah,
brutal.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're blessed. I could be anywhere on the planet. I'm lucky. Yeah, my wife and I are good. We live small. We could pick up, go anywhere, and I stay here. My wife wants to move south, but I stay here. We have access to the major cities. If we want high culture, but at the same time, Scranton, if you're bored, you're not looking on what's going on any given weekend. I went to the Cher show and saw local talent play Sonny Bono, and it was blown away by. We have the Philharmonic. I was at Afa Gallery. We got Chef Vaughn, who's now a celebrity. I was eating at Friday night his stuff. I just like, oh my gosh, how good is life? Yeah, you know? Yeah. So
I was just out to dinner with him 2 weeks ago, and. He's just a pisser. He makes me laugh.
He's genuine. He's authentic.
But
he's the real
super
deal.
Talented.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy knows his stuff, and it's interesting because, and I joke with him, I'm like, you know, you're not sophisticated on the front end, right? Like when we meet each other, like he's not your proper gentleman. Right, he's a like we'll slap hands and be like, "What's up, bro? How you doing? Oh, yo, you know," and kind of laughing and joking and all that stuff. But when it comes to food and his attention to detail, I mean, you see him on the on his competition right now, and thus far he seems to be crushing it.
Yeah,
and he obviously has the respect of Gordon Ramsay, as you see in the show. But it's interesting because when you go out to eat with him, like, and then. I was talking to him about how he looks at food, like what is he looking for, and you know what makes it good, what makes it not good for him, and I mean he's got this like abundance of not you wouldn't know behind him like where he came from and what he did either. This is a guy who opened up and was the executive chef for Tao in New York City.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, he's got people all over the place that have tremendous respect and admiration for the guy, but he's just real.
Yeah, there's no pretentiousness in the man.
No, he's like, he has his restaurant in Scranton, and he says, "Is this what I want to be making?" No, right? But this is what makes the people happy.
Yeah,
he goes, and so I'm gonna take what I know that they like, and I'm gonna make it the best that it possibly can be. And I'll find, you know, another restaurant, another place at another time, and this is what I'll do, and then I'll have my gourmet fine dining. Man, he wants to get fancy with stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but he's good. He's good at it. And I love when you see that kind of passion behind somebody who's doing something, and especially knowing that he's here in northeastern Pennsylvania, because that is – his character, his behavior is one that you would normally see leave here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because they think that there's bigger opportunities elsewhere or so on and so forth. And I love that he's hanging here. I mean, maybe he'll do some things other places, but this is his home, and he's said that. So it's kind of cool.
Northeast PA is cool. It's a great place to live.
We have a lot of creators here.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of really cool, creative people. And I think it's becoming more abundant on the front end.
I hope people are appreciating it, what we have.
I certainly hope so. Yeah. I think that in the conversations that we've had here, it sounds like that more and more people are really appreciative of it. It's interesting because, you know, you think about like even here in the Wilkes-Barre area, when you think about how the food scene has changed, right? And then the Friedman Restaurant Group, right? Like the idea that Rob Friedman went in and bought up all of these restaurants that were smaller, but now he has Kevin's, Cork, Greco's, right? Like he has all these really, and then and Beaumont in, and I love like the way that it's structured is that you wouldn't feel like it was a part of a food like a hospitality group.
Oh, okay.
Every restaurant is allowed to operate on their own. Their chef does their own thing, and it and these are chefs who are super passionate, right? Like, have you ever been up to the Beaumont Inn?
No, actually, I haven't.
If you just talking to you, I think you would absolutely love it.
Yeah.
My buddy Chef Jeff Hunsinger is the executive chef up there. Out of the backside of the Beaumont, he built this huge garden. You like literally follow a trail and walk through it, and all of the vegetation there is used for the restaurant.
Oh, that's wonderful!
It's so cool.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and like that passion, you know what I mean? The idea he's looking for ingredients and things that are here in this area that he could use. You know, I think beyond that, we had guests come in a while back, but. Who knew we had a Wagyu beef farm right here in northeastern Pennsylvania?
Oh.
Right? We have Greenwood Valley Wagyu right out of the Bloomsburg area.
Yeah.
Boom. Wagyu beef farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's cool to see that development. And I loved that there are places like you who are here doing things, creating things, making things. And it's the one thing that I think that if we go back to – I don't know, maybe 7 years, maybe a little bit further, right? I would say I'm going to go to Pittsburgh this weekend or I'm going to go to Philly this weekend because they have all the things that I want to go tour around and do. And now it's kind of happening here.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, you pick up the Weekender section or whatever in the newspaper or whatever, you search the events on Discover, NEPA, or whatever the format is. And it's like, oh gosh, what am I not getting to sometimes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where this is the first year we built a business. So now my goal is not to work weekends. So I have a staff. So we end up, because now it's like, oh my gosh, we're going to do these things. Like, I didn't want to leave one 60 hour a week job to do another 60 hour a week job and not do half the thing. So yeah. The art galleries, music, the library, even the library programs. I mean, the stuff we have, the makers programs they have at the Scranton Public Library, go in and use a piece of equipment, learn something new. There's just so much going on here.
All the way down to Wyoming Valley Ghost Tours.
Oh, yeah. What a great crew that is,
right?
Too. Yeah.
Like just doing fun stuff like that, like giving us not only a way to learn some history, but be entertained in the process.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, all kinds of craft fairs popping up everywhere. This summer is going to be loaded with a bunch of things.
Yeah, we plotted out almost all of this year, and it was picking what one we were doing, or maybe two. We're a small crew, so if we do two in a weekend and have the winery open, that's a stretch for us. But it's like, oh, I really want to do that. But we're already committed, you know, sometimes. So, yeah, there's a lot going on, and it's neat to have to, like, choose what not to do. Boy, I hope something's going on. We could really use some money going selling some mead somewhere.
Yeah. Are you able to, like when Bloomsburg Fair rolls around, are you able to do something like
that? Yeah, we don't do that. So we definitely can. So we like to do maybe one or two day events is all I want to commit to.
Yeah.
Also, we have to look at what our demographics of the folk are. Mead is not a cheap item. So pretty much if we would sell it, we do make some, pretty much the average price is anywhere from $15 to $25 for what we're selling. Some markets, that's cheap. And like if I would sell our same product down in Washington, D.C. or whatever, we could be charging $45. But here, that's pricey. And so we look at, what is it that we're actually going to turn over at certain events? The events we like are really the theme sort of events, like
beer festival.
No, we don't do those. I'll tell you why we don't do beer or wine festivals.
Okay.
They're fun on your side of the counter. They're absolutely miserable for me.
Yeah, you're just giving away a whole bunch of free stuff.
And there's a point, and I we're pretty ruthless. It's like, all right, this guy's hammered. I don't know who's driving. And we're cutting him off, and so we're the bad guy.
Right.
And we're like, this is not fun. People are just holding out their hands for us, not even like I'm trying to describe. I'm like, you don't care. I poured water in people's glasses already. Yeah, right. Yeah. I poured water in their glass and left them going. And yeah, I'm like, and so if they're fundraisers for groups like Electric City Aquarium, I love those folk. Another great place, and they have a really, really wonderful wine festival, 2 a year. I just rather give them a donation for the cause and maybe attend as a customer.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does us. They're not fun. It's just work. And that's on our guiding principles on the bottom that we have hanging in the winery is we'll have fun doing what we're doing. And that crew said, you know what? We don't really enjoy those. So we don't do them. We much rather do the Horror Film Festival. Those things are really cool. We'll go out to Wally Fest where it's not alcohol centric. Alcohol is being sold, but the whole thing isn't people buying a ticket and trying to get their $40 worth of booze or and then some. Those just never. I feel like I'm enabling bad habits at that point.
And yeah,
that's just something we don't want to do.
I wonder how you would do. Did you do any of the Wyoming Valley Ghost Tour things that they do?
Yeah, they had the thing at the Stegmaier Mansion in I think it was October. That's our crowd. I mean, all the creepy markets, all those things. I mean, it's that. We're making mead, and then we'll make themed labels for whatever event we go to. So whether we'll put a horror film reference on the ones we sell at the horror film festival, or do some sort of ghosty kind of skull on something or whatever, because we have a lot of opportunity. We're doing small batches. We're doing 50-gallon batches, so it's 20 cases at a time. So we have a lot of flexibility, and we work with a lot of local artists. There's so much local talent that are doing labels and playing for stuff. So yeah, we much rather do those things, and we try to do something different all the time too. So
what are some of the events that you will be at coming up?
Oh my gosh, I should have wrote them down because my brain is a sieve, but we'll be doing a couple events in the 44th and Kingston area, the Northeast PA Craftworks, Shiloh, who has Alley Crafts, who's just tremendous. She puts on some really good events. So there's going to be a Bacon Fest. There's a pickle. We made actual pickle mead.
I did see the Bacon Fest.
Bacon Fest is coming. So we'll probably use the maple wine should do pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
And we're actually going to – my game plan is to actually make a bacon mead. So we'll cook down some bacon, make an extract out of some sort of vodka and something, and then add it to the mead and see how it turns out. So a lot of fun kind of stuff along that line. The Roller Radicals is having their wine – we do some wine festivals. The Roller Radicals, the team we sponsor, the roller derby team, will do their wine festivals because they're awesome. They're cool. They're just wonderful people.
Yeah.
And it's not work. It's absolutely not work for those. They're just fantastic. So that's in April. We'll be doing that. So generally, people look at our Facebook page. We have all the events we're coming up to because they keep popping up. And we're doing a new one down in Weisport, and I can't think of the organization. Black Rock event or something along that line. I'm probably butchering it. I apologize. But we're doing a new event down there. It's a kind of a witch festival, kind of rites of spring kind of thing. So we like those kind of.
Are there any actual Renaissance fairs that you go to?
No, Pennsylvania has the one down in the Lancaster area, and they have their house meadery, and so we don't try to penetrate that at this point.
Okay.
And also, we pretty much drew a circle on how far I'm willing to drive. So we look at carbon footprint, time, money, and cost, and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, nah, we're going to try to stay as close as possible. So there's enough going on here. This Electric City Flower Show is coming up, and we just love that in Naog Park. A couple other events in Naog. So that's 2 miles. Like, what? We don't have to go anywhere because, again, the area is cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe you throw a Renaissance Fair or something.
Yeah. We were actually invited out to the Jersey Shore area, not Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, not Jersey Shore, New Jersey.
I passed Williamsport there.
Yeah. And we just looked in that. That was a 3-day commitment, and we're still debating what we're going to do that. But it's for us drive, how much, you know, pretty much my our company car is my Prius. So it's whatever fits in there, and how much can we load up kind of thing. So I don't want to make it work.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like
sounds like
it's working. I don't need to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is there any progress on like a traveler's guide, like a wine trail / type of thing going on that helps you guys?
Yeah. So the Lackawanna County has their own wine trail that connects the wineries in our county. And that we had people come in due to that. Really, Google's our friend. But the Discover Northeast PA also has their own adult beverage trail or whatever you want to call it. So that's brought some business in. And that's pretty much all that I'm aware of at this point. We thought about doing some joining the Luzerne County one because I think we're close enough to make the connection. But we look at what our marketing dollars and what's the most effective at times too. And so we're thinking about a couple things.
Great. How many people do you have on your team, by the way?
I have 6 wonderful people working for us. They are just I'm lucky. I am blessed. Most of the folk that work for us were customers looking for, really interested in what we do, and then said, "Hey, are you hiring?" And "Yes, you're exactly who we need." So, yeah, we've been, I count my blessings with the team. It's just absolutely wonderful, the 6 of them.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Does your wife get involved?
No. She's a wildlife biologist. She teaches anatomy and physiology and a whole bunch of other courses at Northampton Community College. She likes doing what she's doing. I like what we're doing, and it's like we like the separation working together, and then
You don't get sick of each other that way.
Yeah. Love my wife, but I don't know if I could work with her.
My wife and I joke about the same thing.
Vice versa, actually. I don't know if she could work for me.
Well, and this is true, too. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dan, was there anything that we didn't cover or that we didn't talk about that, you really wanted to make sure that we talked about?
Yeah, we talked about PA Preferred. No, I think we covered really the essence and how we got to be where we want to be. The advice I would give anyone is don't ruin a good hobby. I saw a number of wineries and breweries people open up without really thinking through the financials and having the business acumen, and they're the most miserable winemakers I've seen, kind of thing. So I just warn people to really think, and because you need money to do this. Our investment's about $250,000. Largely it was self-funded, and we were able to get some loans during the COVID time, but you got to have access to the cash flow or else you're going to be absolutely miserable. So
yeah.
I like to warn people because people listen to your show is great. I mean, I was listening to the couple last week that had the franchise, this whole aspect. I didn't think, I learned about that and their experience, and then listening to Sal and all these war stories. And to me, this should almost be required listening at business schools and a college, just for folk to really think about what they're about to do. We gave a talk at College Misericordia to their business class, and we just listed and said, all right, you want to have a small business, and we just bulleted out who's paying for the 401k, who's paying for the vacation, who's paying for healthcare, if you're living at home and your parents are doing that, you want to start a business, ideally. You have a spouse or a significant other that you could rely on to do that, go for it. But if you haven't thought about these things, you're in for misery.
I will say this. And it's not to it's not a debate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because I do agree with you. I think that where we skew things sometimes, though, and this is where I see people who have real potential, but then they've been sucked in by the analysis paralysis.
Oh, fair.
Right. And I'm like, they'll ask the question, well, when is the best time for me to start? Mm. My answer to that would be yesterday.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't mean that you need to go open the doors.
Right.
Right? I know somebody right now who's actively, and they only have minimal experience as a teenager working with one of the bigger name coffee places.
Mm-hmm.
But she right now is very interested in just opening up a themed coffee shop. And she lives in a very populous city. It's this idea that there is a checklist of things that you should be doing before you just go jump right into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because albeit that maybe you've got some upfront capital to put into it, mm-hmm. you've got to be thinking about the longer road, the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there is definitively a checklist that you should be going through and cover your basis and leave yourself, I even think that sometimes when people say you should have about 3 months worth of your bills covered, I think you should have about 6 months worth of your bills covered.
Yeah.
Because cash flow can become sometimes a real pain in the ass too.
Yeah.
And so I think that these are some of the precursors to opening up a business. But the thing that I really get frustrated with about some people, because I think that they have tremendous potential, is the fact that just because maybe some of those other things you don't have checked off doesn't mean that you can't use your time wisely to go learn about all the other stuff and really get into it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I wasn't saying don't do it.
I'm sure.
Look for mentorship. Look.
Exactly.
Learn on someone else's dime. Like for me, if like Honey Hole Winery, I was able to apprentice with him for a year before I opened up our own winery. PIL Salted Earth. If I had lived a little closer to him, I'm like, maybe I would make his meads and then let him run that old business stuff. And I'm going to actually continue doing nothing but what I really like doing, which is the mead making and the mead selling. Let him handle payroll. Let him handle, that. So that's what I'm saying. You don't, it's not either or. It's like, but think, consider those things. And is there a way, what is your path? And if you could get someone to effectively fund that education and through either apprenticing with them or working with them or part time or something along that line, as opposed. But you've seen some horror stories where people dived
Absolutely.
In and like, oh my gosh,
and they're still
paying off the debt,
no doubt,
whether poor credit or otherwise. So.
Well, and the other interesting thing here is that to your point, find mentorship or go work with somebody, right, in that field. And I encourage you to be absolutely transparent about what your intentions are, because I've even heard of stories where there has been somebody who was very, very interested in getting involved in a type of business saying that this is something I want to do on my own, but were smart enough to go get mentorship. And when they did, it ended up that they were so transparent and so honest about what they were doing that this individual who they were going to work with, who had a very well-established business, the organization was set up for future success, didn't have family or anybody as a success plan, and it actually ended up working out where this person, rather than having to go start from scratch, the door opened for them to be the successor.
Yeah.
And so they went from mentee to successor to now they own a well-established business. They're doing exactly what they love doing, but they did it based off of their honesty.
Yeah, yeah.
And that experience and that infrastructure and all of that ended up giving them that opportunity. Had they not just put it out there?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of what people need to know. I think, yes, have your checkbox, right? Cover your grounds, make sure you know what you're doing. But at the same time, don't get caught up with analysis paralysis.
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah. You could go, it's all right, here we go, 30 years went by and I didn't pull the trigger on
it.
I
never
thing.
Did. My biggest regret is, no, sometimes you just got to do it.
You just need a plan on how you're going to achieve it, though, and that's like eyes wide open.
Yeah. I think that, too, if you think about whatever business you want to get into, there is a very entry-level point for a lot of businesses. Maybe you let's say you want to open up a winery, right? Well, maybe that doesn't mean that you have the 10,000 foot, square foot tasting room / barrel room / all this, right? Maybe what this means is that you're making it and you're going out to events and that's what you're doing from the beginning. And then you grow from there. And then next thing you know, you have a tasting room. Then the tasting room expands and you keep going.
Yep.
It's to appreciate. I really like what you said before, and one of my takeaways from this is that it really comes down to the quality of life. So if things are what you allow to control you, then of course it's always going to be what's the next tangible thing I can buy or what's the tangible thing I'm going to lose, right? And instead of focusing on something like that, it's this idea that throughout this process, your business has matured, but it's done so at a pace that you've enjoyed.
Yeah.
And the people who you've attracted to work with you are also very much a part of this and enjoying that as well. So there's this real sort of circle of quality of life thing going on. But let's face it, when you have people doing what they love, the end product is oh so much better.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think that there's a really sort of nice lesson to learn about your story in general, and I think that in the realm of crafting and kind of if you're a creator or whatever, it's to know that you don't have to have the big showroom at first. You don't have you like just go start doing what you love, and because that reflects in your product, people will love it, and then all of a sudden there's a demand. Spapi Sean.
Yeah.
Right, with the smoked cheeses. Like,
yeah.
Here's a guy who was just doing it out of the back of his house.
Yeah.
Smoking cheeses.
Yeah.
Now the guy's at every freaking event that's out there.
Yeah.
We all know him. We know his product, and like he's loving doing what he does.
Yeah.
You know, and that story goes on into brewers and wineries and cider makers and so much more, the honeys and the apiary. I mean, like, you know, it's like thinking about all this stuff that we have, it's really coming into more abundance here in northeastern Pennsylvania. And
yeah.
I love it. But I think I think that should continue to motivate people to say, hey, I have a dream. There's not too many.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's not too many.
Come on in.
You know what I mean?
Come on in.
And what I've always found really interesting too is that, you know, people say, well, yeah, but if I go and I tell him that I want to open up one, he's not going to want to help me. It's like, no, you got it all wrong. Like, if you go talk to them about what your interests are and what you want to do, they love what they do so much, they'll probably load you with information more than you expected.
Yeah, we scared some people.
I mean, and that's it, because when you're passionate about it, like, that's what you talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's put it out there. Think about what you want. Think about what you want to do, but then start asking all the questions to all the people who know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the internet's a wonderful thing, but talking to people who's living it is going to be that much more.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about how you picked up the phone and called Deep Roots, right? And you were like, "Hey, where do you get your apples?"
Yeah,
like that. That's the camaraderie within an industry, like within the crafter market. You know, it's like, you guys all have a respect for each other. You're not stepping on each other's toes. You're not like, well, screw you. If you have apples, that means people are going to buy less from. No, they're not. They're going to buy. No, the more there is, the more demand you create for a product, and then the more awareness there is, and the more we want it.
Yeah, you look at the craft beer market. People like to come to when there's a number of different breweries or ciders or whatever. They're traveling out of the area. They want to hit a couple. So the more the merrier is what I say. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now a question for you. You said, do you still drink beer?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So I love Groove Coopers, Last Minute, the local brewers. I'm a more of a stout. English Mild, actually. Oh my gosh, Cooper's, their lead beer when they open up was an English Mild, and I thought that took some guts. I'm like, here we go, we're in the IPA world, you're gonna lead off with English Mild, and it was absolutely brilliant. So those ESBs, Hopping Eagle, their beers are fantastic.
But you're typically like a stout drinker.
Generally, yeah, I'll drink almost anything. Sours, I fell out of favor with. I like a good lager, pilsners, kolsches.
Love a pilsner.
It just depends on the mood. Beer is a broad category. So
sure
is it warm? Is it cold? What am I? You know, how am I feeling? Am I eating something with it? What am I eating with it? I'm going to pair with it. So it depends. But there's very little. I'm not big on the milkshakey IPAs. Uh-uh. The syrup. Yeah. You know, my wife, she was traveling. She brought one home and poured it on, and like, well, it looks like a smoothie. And I understand it's the trend. I don't want any part of it.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah, nope. No.
Imprint Brewing, which is in, I think, outside of Lancaster somewhere.
Okay.
And it's crazy because we were just talking about it not too long ago, and there are people who literally will line up down the street, they get this beer, and then they will turn around and sell it online for like $25 a bottle.
Good job.
Or a can.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
And it's like a four pack. You're selling it for $100. They picked it up for a four pack for $24.
It's not legal, but okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's how that's going.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No. SBC, when I can't think who the brewer was, they were doing the same sort of thing. They'd have lines up for. And my brain's terrible, but I can't. They had the same thing. Would do these limited releases. People would line up as if it was like lining up for concert tickets or something, which is cool. I mean, fandom and all that kind of stuff is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't wrap my head around, though. The reason I brought up Imprint was because those are one of them. When you open it up and you dump it out, it's like thick and chunky.
Well, I'm older, so I don't understand.
I don't know if older has any. I mean, some people are older; they love it. Yeah, I can't get into it.
Yeah, no, I'm a traditionalist when it comes to a lot
purist, if you will.
Almost purist. I like some things added, but not even to the point with stouts where I just want a basic stout. Don't add peanut butter. Don't add chocolate. Don't add mint. Just want a solidly made good, either a sweet stout, a dry stout, an export stout. There's you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny because I made my rounds over the years of, you know, kind of going through the phases. Like, ooh, I love this beer. It was only a short amount of time where I thought I liked some of the more obscure, you know, peanut butter, this, that. But that phased out pretty quickly. Yeah. Then I was on the IPA kick for a while. And now, genuinely, if I am to have a beer now, I love like a true authentic, like just a good German beer, like a good, you know, good Pilsner. I want to taste everything about it, and it's, I don't want any junk, and yeah. I want all that other stuff.
Give me a Munich Dunkel or Schwarzbier or something along that line, and I'm a happy boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, I'm just not drinking just to drink it. You know, that's the point where I'm usually eating. I'm probably only going to have two or three anymore. Right. I know my limits. I want to get up the next day and be bright eyed, exactly. Bushy tailed. Just can't do it anymore. My metabolism doesn't work that well. So then I have to be picky. And if I'm going to be picky, I'm going to go not just what I think I'm going to like, because there's so many different styles and it depends. All right, boy, I haven't had Grooves X. Let me try their porter or something along that line. There's so much variety around here to try. Benny's is brilliant. Breaker is brilliant. I mean, there's just, we're golden age. God love life.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Dan, this has been a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, let me plug a couple things because I'd be remiss. So we're primarily direct-to-consumer. We do shipping. All that's on the website. We do some limited wholesale. Wholesale partners, Sabatini's Bottle Shop and Bar, they've just been supporting us since the beginning. I can't say enough about Lindo and the whole Sabatini family for supporting us.
Good crew.
We have a good shelf in their bottle shop, so just ask for mead and it will be ours. And they actually have a decent other mead selection too, so not only ours. We're up at Hopping Eagle, so they have it available as part of their flight pours. And Last Minute and Groove will switch back, either having a cider or a meat up there. That was more providing them a gluten-free alternative. We don't do a lot of wholesale, so we really pick our wholesale partners very particularly. We want to make sure they're on top of their game, and those three breweries are. And, of course, Sabatini's is just a destination to begin with. So,
cool. And they could also come directly to you.
Oh,
right?
Of course. Yeah. Find us at events or find us at 419 South Blakely Street. Spacetimemeadworks.com is the easiest way to find us. Google is our friend.
Are you on Facebook and stuff?
Facebook, Instagram. We're doing a little bit of Threads right now, and I think that is it at this point. That's
busy. Yeah, get you on TikTok.
Yeah, we'll get there someday. We'll see how long that lasts.
It's the hot spot now.
Yeah.
People are getting some attention there.
Yeah.
Plus you have a fun product, so
yeah, we'll do some. Cool. We'll get one. I got to get one of the crew to start doing that. I'm offloading some stuff, so it's like, yeah, that's a good
remember,
idea.
Remember, Frank, I don't want to work.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That we'll find out. That's on a list for someone else to do at some point.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I guess we all know where to find you now. You have on the website. Is that where you're going to be posting about events that you will be at?
Facebook is our friend.
Facebook, and for the events.
People could sign up to the email list. They usually get a heads up when we do new product releases too.
Great.
But we're pretty, I mean, within 24 hours, we have it on social media anyway. So you know, Instagram and Facebook are our friends as much
beautiful.
As Google is. So.
Do you do anything in regards to, is there any kind of like creative buying? Like I know somebody does like case clubs and I don't know. Do you do any of that?
Nah, not yet. We're too tiny right now. Our production runs are small. We're usually, in fact, our flagship's been sold out for, I'm sad to say, 4 months now. Just trying to, yeah, sales of some things have outpaced production. So we haven't had to do any of those novelty things yet. We're thankful for all our customers and support we have. I count my blessings and, people have been supporting us, and we're learning so much and having a ball doing it.
Well, Dan, I think this is great. Sometimes we would do tastings on here while we're talking, but I think I'll be just interested to do the tastings after we check out here. And I think for the listeners, I don't want to bore you with listening to us smack our lips around here, but you know, we've done tastings on here before, and it seemed like it was like a little. After listening back, I was like, man, maybe let's spare them that.
They're tough. They're tough.
It is, yeah, because yeah. we're trying to enjoy it, but I'm yeah. also trying to explain it, and I'm not a professional at doing that. But I think, you know, I genuinely appreciate you bringing some stuff for us here, and I think that, you know, if I'm listening to this, I'm going to be eager to come check out your place and check out your product. And, you know, it's nice that you're right over at Sab's, because that's a it's a nice central point for a lot of people to go over and pick up some unique stuff.
Yeah, that's what we want. I mean, first of all, Sab's is cool, so we definitely want to be there. That addresses more of our southern reach, and so we're also looking for equal in the other compass points. Do we have something like Sab, which I'm not – let me know. If anyone's aware of someone that's really cool in their neck of the woods that we should be at, we'll look to go there too.
Yeah, a little bit more south would be Party Beverage, right?
Yeah, Party Beverage, he's done. But that's like a beer store, so I don't know if they
I think,
can
doesn't
sell.
He have wines, too? I don't know if he had wines, too.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I can only sell where they have a wine license. You'll see some mead, but they're bottled up as draft, and that's just another regulatory hoop. I have no complaints about the regulatory.
Were you able to get in with Garrity's at all?
We can do all that. We just choose not to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I want more of the – I don't want the supermarket feel. I want like a Sab's feel, like a destination bottle shop kind of. That's where I think we fit in, because the staff are knowledgeable that could talk, understand what we're selling.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what we don't – and again, nothing against those places.
No,
but the
absolutely.
Person behind is like, you ask for a French-style cider and they're going to roll their eyes at you. So, yeah.
I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not, you know, they're not old enough
aisle
to drink.
Three.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to fit the niche, right? You got to fit the niche.
That's it.
So, that's how it goes.
We're pretty picky. In fact, we don't even do anything at the liquor stores either. We have an opportunity to do that. I just rather keep it small, talk to the owners, get a relationship.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Dan, you're an authentic guy, man.
I appreciate that. Thank
yeah,
you.
Really, yeah, really. I love this conversation. It was a lot of fun. I know before we head out, we had talked about we're going to do a $20 gift card giveaway.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool. Well, for our new listeners, the way it works is on the Getting to Know the 570 Facebook page, when we post about this episode, you'll have to like, share, and then comment a keyword from today's episode. Now, I typically turn to Brian, but I already got it.
Okay.
I already,
you go for it.
Because I think one of the things that I walk away with today is that we got to continue to educate people about what mead is. So I think it would be really it would be good for us to make the keyword phrase, mead is honey wine.
That's all. I was just thinking that in my head.
Okay.
So that's brilliant. Yeah,
I like
just,
it.
That's the comment.
Yep.
We need everybody to comment. Mead is honey wine.
Yep. Yep.
And that's it. And
I like
so
it.
That'll be the comment. It's it's pretty simple. We'll also put it in the context of our post, so you'll just be able to read it and copy share. that's what it is. So here's the thing: $20 gift card. We do not handle that. It'll be about 2 weeks or so after this episode airs, and then we'll do a random drawing on Facebook. Whoever the winner is, we'll make sure that we notify you, and then you will have to connect with Dan. We'll put you guys together. And then you will have to go to the winery, to meadery winery.
I call it both. I call it, when we first opened, I told people I'm going to open up a meadery in Dunmore, and they said, oh, a butcher shop. I was like, no.
Oh, meadery.
I was like, no. So I say winery just to lessen the confusion.
Well, there you go.
So a great name for a butcher shop.
Yeah, the meadery.
The meadery.
Yeah.
With
what the
a
hell?
T.
Space time meadery butchers? What the heck's up with that?
So anyway, when we choose a winner, you'll go see Dan at the winery at Space Time Mead and Cider Works, and you'll work that out there. So that'll be awesome. If you are already a customer and you have a favorite product, or if you've tried things and you have ideas for new things, like just we love it when people leave us comments and kind of flood us up with some cool stuff, because we'd love to hear from you. Other people are looking to hear from you and kind of get feedback. Like how much do you love Space Time Mead and Cider Works? Is there a particular mead that you've had that you want to share a story about? We had a nice story, a nice conversation about right place, right time. share a little thing about where you've purchased a bottle of mead or a bottle of wine or a bottle of cider and something that you typically like to just buy and take places. We'd love to hear that. Leave that in the comments for us. In the meanwhile, Dan, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate you having me today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Like, share, comment, subscribe. Do whatever it is you want to do. But most importantly, just keep tuning in because that's why we keep doing this. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening and supporting the 570.
If you like this episode,
please leave a review and make sure to check out all the past episodes.
If you or someone you know is interested in being a guest,
message us on Facebook or email podcast@conversionworks.com.